from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network, entering our 10th year of broadcasting Wild Michigan all over the Great Lakes State, brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, also Costa Sunglasses and Darton Archery. Man, how was your 2000? And I know we're like halfway through January already, but 2015 in the books gone. A difficult year for deer hunting for me personally, for hunting in general. For me personally, but some good deer being taken this year. Some really good deer being taken. We had what Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense and also the TV show Conquest 200 considered the perfect storm for antler growth. We had a really good year of some very nice bucks being taken out of Michigan. Of course, on the downside of that, we've also had the cases of CWD. Not in a fenced area, but in the wild this year. And right now with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, Chad Stewart joins us for a little talk on CWD. Now, earlier this week on Tuesday, you guys had a town hall meeting. Chad, welcome to the show. A town hall meeting in DeWitt discussing CWD. Of course, the first case found not far from DeWitt in Meridian Township. And how did the town hall meeting go? Look, there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered. And so far, I mean, how did it go overall?
Yeah, and thanks for having me, Duran, and appreciate the coverage of this topic. The town hall meeting in DeWitt, we thought was very positive. You know, the weather has been less than ideal for traveling lately, but we still had well over 100 people come out in the listen to some presentations by both myself and Dr. Steve Schmidt, who's our wildlife veterinarian. And there were some fantastic questions that came up and a lot of research and prion-related questions. And of course, prions are the infectious agent that causes chronic wasting disease. So a lot of really great conversations, a lot of great questions. And I think we got a really positive response. The one thing and the one criticism that we had from several people was that maybe we weren't as upfront with what we were asking hunters to do. And that's something that maybe we can focus on a little bit, both with you and help getting the word out and in future discussions. But that's something that we probably could have done a better job at. And the bottom line is we just need a lot of hunter and landowner support in battling this disease. We think we still have a chance at this, and we're going to go for it.
Chad Stewart is our guest here from the Michigan DNR. Chad, I really think that we were fortunate to get it kind of early. It would appear to be early. We've learned a few things about prions and what they can withstand along the way or withstand along the way, but I guess I'm not clear on what the general public didn't understand. It was pretty clear cut to me that there were 9 townships, 3 counties, no baiting, no feeding, and mandatory testing in those areas.
Yeah. And that's what we had established going into the hunting season this year. Basically, 3 county area, which we called our CWD management zone. Basically, if you were in those 3 counties, you were not allowed to feed or bait throughout the entirety of the year. And then if you narrow that down to what we called our core CWD zone, which we marked as DMU 333, which was a 9 township area surrounding Meridian Township where we first found it, there were some additional restrictions. One is if you shot a deer in those 9 township area, you had to bring it in to one of our check stations. And we had 3 check stations established, and they were open 7 days a week. So hopefully it wasn't too inconvenient, and those kids got to be pretty good at getting samples and taking heads off. Yeah, some other things going on. We didn't allow the salvage of roadkill deer because basically we wanted our staff to be able to pick those deer up before someone picked it up and salvaged it for their own consumption or for a pet's consumption or something like that. And then we also got rid of the antler point restriction on the combo license, the restricted tag of the combo license. And that's really the only part in the state that's like that, because we did that because we didn't want people passing up yearling bucks in this area, as yearling bucks are more likely to disperse from the area. And obviously, if they're exposed to CWD or have CWD, then they're going to take it outside that core. So that's more of a containment type regulation change. We thought the rules were pretty straightforward, and I think we've got a lot of compliance. But yet, at the same time, we're still getting we know of people that are baiting and feeding even now, and we're looking to enforce those regulations.
No, and I noticed we're friends on the Facebook there, and you guys had a flight planned in some areas around this southern lower Michigan here, looking for baiting, looking for people supplemental feeding. The winter has not been that bad down here, which is nice, and I think that they've had a pretty easy route to sustainability this year. But there are still folks, either good-hearted or with other intentions, that want to feed.
Yeah, it just goes back to, people are passionate about deer, and people want to see deer. And some people put feed out for deer just because they think that the deer need it to get through the winter, which they don't. They've evolved for, thousands of years without someone giving them a free handout. They can make it on their own. But a lot of times people just want to see them and be up close to them, and they develop sort of personalized relationships with their local deer herd. And on the surface, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that passion. But at the same time, when you're dealing with a disease like chronic wasting disease, or even a disease like bovine tuberculosis up in northeast Michigan, when you bring deer and artificially concentrate them in an area, the likelihood for them to interact with more deer more frequently increases drastically. And when that happens, the increase for the transmission of this disease increases drastically too. And that's something that we're putting a lot of time, effort, and resources into preventing. So ultimately, we're trying to enforce some of those feeding regulations that we just implemented. So people who are violating those might be getting a knock on the door from a conservation officer here in the near future.
Yeah, we like I mentioned earlier, we have a great relationship with Lucky Buck, and we enjoy the product a great deal. But we also, in our advertising, had to mention, make sure you know where you're at when you use it, and to use it along the guidelines according to the DNR. They've been great about posting things, not only from Michigan, but throughout the United States, keeping their website up to date as to legal usage and the like. And unfortunately, in the area I hunt, we were unable to use it. But, there are other places that our friends do, and we get those reports from them. So, again, we have to be fair. We have to make sure the message is correct, much like you guys are doing. Real quickly, I want to ask you a question. There was a big mule deer found sans head late last year. Any idea as to where that came from?
Well, we did find a mule deer that was reported to us off of Eaton County. It was last fall, and actually, it sort of turned out to be one of these well-known deer that was just on the side of the road that a lot of the local hunters called in about, and ultimately, that some of that information, and because we had already established CWD nearby, that was one of those items that we had to respond to very quickly, because CWD really originated out west, where a lot of the mule deer herds are. And there's most of the states that have mule deer have chronic wasting disease. So, and we do have regulations in place that prohibit the importation of entire deer into areas if it originates from a state that has CWD. So with that, we knew that this deer likely came from a state that had CWD, and we wanted to get on that really quickly.
Okay, Chad, hold on real quick. Sorry about that. Up against the break, we're going to find out more about this mysterious mule deer. We're speaking with Chad Stewart from the Michigan DNR. It's 2016, man, finally getting underway with Wild Michigan.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, Thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and at 'em bright and early, I'm all business in my suit. Yeah, I'm dressed up for...
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Kind of left poor Chad Seward hanging on that last question. My apologies. We are in the middle of a question I asked in the last segment here, talking about CWD. We talked about a... it was funny because when this mule deer hit social media... It was all about, and this disgusts me to no end, to be honest with you. I don't care if it is a roadkill, when somebody is probably a buck, somebody, and cuts the head off and leaves the rest of the carcass there. Now, Chad, the official ruling on this, because it's still part of managed wildlife in Michigan, without a tag, you probably can't possess that, correct?
Yeah, they need some sort of possession tag originating from the state where which it originated from. So there has to be some sort of paperwork that goes with it. And to be clear, that the deer actually was skull-capped, so the antlers were gone, but the rest of the carcass was intact. But regardless, that's a direct violation of some of our importation regulations. It winds up that the deer came from an out of state, out west, which was likely a state that has CWD. Because the animal still had its head intact, we were able to extract the lymph nodes and have it tested. Unfortunately, it came back negative for CWD. So there was no disease concern or disease transmission concerns. But it really highlights the concern with bringing in carcasses from out west and the ability for a disease to become established in a new state or a new location. If that deer would have been positive for the disease and was just sort of discarded along the road somewhere, as that carcass would have deteriorated, you have a new potential outbreak site for this disease. And because these prions or prions or however you want to say it are so resistant to degradation, they're going to persist in the environment for years, maybe even decades.
You know, and that's the one thing, too. This is my hypothesis on the whole original thing in Meridian Township was it looks, because now we know these prions can come up through the ground into the, you know, native grasses or whatever is growing at that time. It seems like somebody discarded some leftovers from an out west hunt that came up through the ground. And again, that was my take on it. I don't know the exacts on this.
Yeah, and we don't have a definitive answer on how it originated either, and I think we're in good company. There's a lot of states that don't know how CWD was first transmitted into their state, but we do know that we've tested over 34,000 deer before this year. None of them have ever come up with CWD. We know that the deer that we've tested so far are native Michigan deer. You know, they did not swim across Lake Michigan from Wisconsin, and you know, supporting some of that hypothesis that you have, you know, our law enforcement officers did a little I-94 sting in late November, and within, I think it was 4 hours, they pulled over six hunters coming from either Illinois or Wisconsin, both states with CWD, and bringing in entire carcasses. So when you extrapolate how many deer are potentially being brought in from either out west or other states that have CWD, over the course of the past decade or 15 years, it's pretty easy to see that we could have, you know, hundreds, maybe even thousands of deer that have come in from those states illegally. And the odds of one or two of them having CWD isn't so far-fetched anymore.
No, and you know, Wisconsin has now shut down some of their baiting and feeding area in some of their areas. They've been pretty heavily hit with CWD themselves.
Yeah, they first discovered it in, I believe it was late 2001, and just to show you where we're at compared with where they're at as far as first discovery, once they started looking and started getting numbers back the next year in 2002, they had over 200 positive deer, and right now they have CWD in most of their counties in southern Wisconsin. It's actually creeping up through northern Wisconsin. It's actually not too far from the UP border right now. But they didn't know this at the time, but it had been there for years, and it had been established for many years because it was already endemic in their deer herd. We've tested over 4,200 deer to date, and we've only gotten 5 positives. So we caught it much more quickly than what Wisconsin caught it comparatively, and that's why we're hitting this so aggressively, because if we stop right now, we're going to look like Wisconsin here in the next 20 or 30 years, and that's what we don't want.
No, I mean, look, we've got enough problems as it is with invasive species around the Great Lakes. We don't need something creeping into the land area of things either, because it'll be very difficult. We've been trying to manage, a lot of us have been trying to manage deer herd on our own, you know, and to get everybody on the same page is difficult enough. Throw something like CWD into the mix makes it a bit more difficult. Now, let's take into consideration, let's answer some questions about, while we got a few minutes left in this segment, how the DNR is managing these core zones, because what people are afraid of, or what I'm getting a lot of response from, is they're just going in and decimating everything, just wiping out the whole deer herd. But I need the truth from you about that.
Yeah, and I've heard those concerns too. I would say let's look at the numbers. You know, we've tested about 4,200 deer so far, and it's true, we have employed sharpshooters, but they've contributed to about 500 deer, a little over 500 deer to that number. So it's a very small number, and they're only working basically within about 2 miles of where we're finding positive. So it's a much more confined area, especially in Meridian Township, where there's not a lot of hunting going on anyway, because it's very suburbanized.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are going in there, removing deer, and getting a lot of deer, and they're very good at what they do. But a bulk of our testing so far is coming from hunters. You know, I think we have over 2,800, I think we're maybe even approaching 3,000 deer already that are submitted by hunters. This is just normal hunters that are hunting in this area, and all we're doing now is testing them. Additionally, we're picking up well over, I think it's 600 roadkill deer at this point. And hopefully no one has any concern about that, because those are deer that are just going to get, that are hit anyway. But we've also employed disease control permits, which is really one of the smaller numbers. It's only about 300, maybe 350 deer to this point. So hunters are making up most of our sampling effort right now, that and roadkill. The sharpshooting, though it's efficient and good at targeting numbers and actually really good at getting positive deer off the landscape per number of deer tested, it's a small number. So we're not going in and annihilating the deer herd. We're doing it in a much more targeted, focused manner.
Good deal. I appreciate all the good news. Glad that town hall meeting in DeWitt went well. I wanted to attend that myself, but we got a little behind on that. But I'm sure it was a good turnout and some good questions and some good information brought to those people out there, because that's very close to where I hunt out in Langsburg. So, again, I'm glad that the DNR is really on top of this stuff with CWD and that the hunters are cooperating as well. Chad Stewart joining us here from the Michigan DNR. Dude, thank you so much for joining us here on Wild Michigan.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Go to michigan.gov/DNR. You can find out all the information as to CWD in Michigan and where and when you can bait, feed, and everything else. Make sure you're up to date on the rules. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez in the studio on the Michigan Talk Network, brought to you by Costa Sunglasses. See what's out there, man. Look, I love my Costa sunglasses. Even in the wintertime, perfect, perfect, perfect. So, just so you know, CostaSunglasses.com is where you can find them. And we're going to talk fishing right now. Thanks to Chad Stewart for talking CWD with us in the first couple of segments. Going to talk to our good friend Mark Martin right now, pro walleye angler, getting ready for the Hard Water Fishing School. And you can find him on his website, markmartins.net. But you got him here right now. Mark, how are you, buddy?
Hey, not too bad, Duran. How about yourself?
Doing well. I was in Louisville last week at the Archery Trade Association show when you called last. But, we got back. We were hooking up with you because you've got your hardwater fishing schools coming up, and you're going to be at Lake Missaukee up in Lake City here pretty soon.
Yeah, we're going to be there. We're just going to start pre-fishing later this afternoon, a few of my pro staffs, and then a couple media people are coming in to sample it early with us, and then by Sunday when we have the kickoff, we'll know where we're going to go on Monday morning, Tuesday, and half a Wednesday out there and catching a lot of, a few of my pro staff have been up there catching a few fish already.
Nice. So what's in that lake over there, right, that you're going to be fishing for?
It's a real potpourri. It's it's an inland lake, and I like to offer at least one of them every year. And it's got lots of pike, walleye. And last year we got quite a few walleye, but they're just a little bit small. We got, 50 keepers or something like that last year. But now those fish, according to my pro staff, they're legal up. They're over 15 inches, and most of them are 16 to 18. So it's going to be a good, catch on the walleyes. And then the bluegills and sunfish and crappie, they're just go crazy, when you get on the right weed edge, and you just don't even need live bait. You just use plastic, whatever your choices of plastic are. We've been using Gulp last year and Impulse from Northland, and the guys really liked it because they didn't have to sit there and rebait all the time.
Yeah, plastics have come a long way. I mean, some of them infused with little pieces, parts of insects and the like to really keep them on that bite. And it really, Mark, I mean, you've watched a lot of innovations in the industry, especially, throughout the walleye world. But, I mean, what they're doing with plastics now is just amazing.
Oh, it is. They're making them softer, more lifelike. So when the fish grab them, they not only taste good, but they feel like the real thing to the fish. So that gives you an extra, tenth or second anyhow to get the hook set in. I mean, a lot of times when I was doing demonstrations in the tanks at Novi this past weekend, they just grab it and run around with it, and I'd have to pull it away from them before they did anything with it. So it was, you got to really see the fish really, bite it and won't let go. But and we were last year on the plastics, we were putting it on our spoons and jigging walleyes and catching them on plastic as well as minnows, and just caught an oodle of largemouth bass and a few smallmouth and lots of northern pike. And we had a few over 30 inches, and one I think I was just about 40 last year. And
wow.
So it's been going pretty darn good, I guess already, because my one pro staff that lives right there had one over 30 inches the other day, and he had, his buddy and him had two limits of walleyes 3 days ago.
Wow, that's awesome. And we've been really slow on getting the ice. How's the ice looking up there?
It's looking really good. When the last time I talked to him was 2 days ago, and they had 7 to 8 inches. His dad was putting out permanent shacks with track vehicles. So,
wow.
So by the time we get there today, I'm expecting close to 10 inches of ice, and then it's going to start to, I hear there's going to be a little warm up here today a little bit and tomorrow, but then it's going to go right back into a deep freeze situation again.
Yeah, I haven't been on the ice myself. I've been a little nervous about it, and we've got friends, my good friend Norm Smith up there is northeast of that area, but he's been out there fishing quite a bit, fishing around some of the edge parts, because there's still some thinner ice towards the center. But Mark, yeah, when you go out, what are some of the safety tools you're taking to check the ice?
Well, augers are the last, you know, I mean, I take my auger once I, you know, it makes it a lot simpler, but the old-fashioned spud is what you want to have in your hand at all times when you're checking, not only in, you know, while you're checking, if you went through, you got something to catch the ice, but I also carry ice spikes with me. That are down my sleeve, and I can easily access them. And if I did get into trouble, at least I can pull myself out. And the big other thing is, don't go out there by yourself. And you got to have a friend. And we also have a gallon bottle with a nylon cord in it, with rocks glued to the bottom of it. And also the other end of the cord is glued to the top of the inside of the bottle top. So when you unscrew it, you got this rope that will just pull right out. So you grab the bottle top and wrap it around your hand, the rope, and you throw, if it ever had to be used, you'd sure. throw the bottle towards whatever you want somebody to get, and it's full of rocks, and it'll go a long ways. And you just bring a lot of safety precautions with you, and you do the right things, and you don't put yourself into bad situations. And for doing it, you know, 50 some years that I have, you get to know what you're looking at before you get to it, but you still get off of, you know, before you ever put a machine on the ice, you walk out. You do it the old-fashioned way with a spud and test it out, drill some test holes, and then keep walking, and then drive right where you got through making test holes. Just because you spudded right here and there's 7 inches of ice doesn't mean another block out there is going to be 7 inches of ice. You got to keep doing it. If there's no foot tracks, no snowmobile tracks, no four-wheeler tracks, don't be Columbus and go out there and just go anyhow. Go out there with the expectation that you're going to be doing your own Columbus work with a spud, and once you've found out it's safe, and then you can proceed. And I do that on Saginaw Bay. I do that Lake Erie. I do it every place I go. I don't remember, you know, I have these people that just go, it's got to all be this thick, and they just take off. You know, them are the ones that find themselves in trouble eventually.
Yeah, I'm not that adventurous. I usually wait till somebody's out there, but still,
right.
even so, there could be weak spots and trapdoor ice that you're not going to find.
Right. And the only way you're going to find it is by walking slowly, having a friend with you, doing the exact same thing as you're doing.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame inductee Mark Martin. You get a long title now. We're going to be talking more about your freshwater fishing, the hardwater school that you got coming up. I got all freshwater.
That's all right.
but we're going to take a break here in a second, Mark. But I got to tell you, it was nice to be in Grand Rapids to watch you get inducted into the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame and to have you here on the show. We're going to talk a little about what you have coming up with the Hardwater Fishing School coming up to Lake Missaukee up there in Lake City. And Lake City, of course, we saw Boning Archery, who's from Lake City, at the ATA show last week in Louisville. We'll talk more about ATA coming up in a little bit. It was a pretty good show. Not as much fun as Indy, but Louisville's okay. We'll say that much. It's Wild Michigan. Make sure you check us out. Check out our podcast. All our info, links, and guests and experts like Mark Martin on our website, wildmichiganradio.com.
This is Mark Zona from Zona's Awesome Fishing Show, and you're listening to my guy, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
I'm on a first-name basis at the tackle shop. I got a charge account running up nonstop.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Hopefully I'll run into Mark Zona. Pretty good chance I'll be heading back to the Bassmaster Classic coming up here in March. And we'll have lots of coverage from that, working with my friends at Dick's Sporting Goods. There. Hopefully, fingers crossed on that whole thing. But Ultimate Fishing Show was last weekend ran into David Rose, also Lance Valentine, and our funny our friend Brian Brosdahl down there. And we're speaking right now, talking about ice fishing with Mark Martin here on the show, Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame inductee. Ice fishing school coming up, Lake Missaukee. Mark, give us the dates on that show, if you would, on that class, if you would, please.
That is going to be on the 17th through the 20th. Sunday at noon is orientation. We look over all your equipment and make sure that it's rigged the right way. Do seminars all day long, answer questions, so that on Monday morning all your equipment's ready to go, you're ready to go, you got an idea of what we're going to be doing, so we're going to, you know, have everybody familiar with the lake before we ever go out, you know, using Navionics mapping systems on our iPhones that I use them as like a textbook, and we go all the way to the 20th at noon on Wednesday. So we get a lot of practice on the ice out there. So anybody that is still thinking about it, it's going to be going on. So, and then if you can't make this one, we got the Saginaw one coming up after that on February 7th through the 10th, just before Valentine's Day, big Saginaw Bay. And from what I've seen and what I know my buddies did this year in open water, it's going to be a phenomenal hard water event. And then last but not least, up there in Escanaba, and I've been back there in 15 years with an ice fishing school. I've been back there fishing in open water, but it's always a great time, especially when the walleyes are coming in to spawn into the bay. And we're going to hit that the last 4 days of the season, 12th through 15th up there in Escanaba. So, you know, go to Mark Martin's Fishing Vacation School and you can look all that stuff up, and hope to see the people partake in this. And it's a great learning, you know, tool for people. And we've really taken it to another level here. This last year, we never talked about it before, but we seen that it was a fact. And your locators, don't matter what you have, you can really see fish that are 20, 30 feet from the transducer.
Mm-hmm.
And how you have to, you know, interpret what you're seeing is below the bottom. So on a flash, you're like a Vexilar, the bottom below what you're being able to tell is the bottom will start to shudder a little bit and vibrate. And that's a fish that's within 20, 30 feet of you, and it's still coming in. So you pretend that you see it, and you start fishing like he's there, and you do see him. And that way you don't do something foolish, like jig it the wrong way, too fast, too hard, and freak them out and have them go out the wrong way. You know, and the other thing, on a liquid crystal, like a fish finder, you start looking at the bottom, below the bottom, and it'll be a dash open, dash open, dash open, a little line about as thick as you see between your area code and your phone number. And all of a sudden, it becomes one solid line as it keeps coming in. As it keeps coming in further, that little bitty line below the bottom gets thicker. And then it starts to raise towards the bottom. And most people see it, the bottom sometimes on their liquid crystal just get thicker. Well, that fish has been coming in for a long time or a short while anyhow. And all of a sudden, boom, it pops up above bottom. Oh, there's a fish. Well, it's been there a long time.
Sure.
And so the reason why we figured this out is we had pan cams by Markham, and with our smartphones, we were able to spin them around, and we're, you know, you're playing. Basically, you're playing. That's how you learn. All of a sudden, we'd see fish out in the distance, little shadows. You know, you go, oh, that's a fish. You couldn't tell what kind it was a lot of times, but pretty soon you started noticing your Lowrance had a little line on it, and then we started talking amongst each other, and the Vexilar people said, well, yeah, my below the bottom started vibrating, or there's a pitch change in it before they even see a fish. So, you know, and pretty soon we got to the point where we realized that if two of you are jigging in a shanty or on the ice next to each other and you're both using the same electronics, basically, it's a competition thing if a fish comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to catch it. You want to catch it too, Duran.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You start jigging. Then you start jigging way too much. And it's not saying you can't catch that fish one of you, but more often than not, the fish goes away because it's too intimidated by, oh, that guy did something wrong and kind of freaked him out a little bit. And he gets freaked out too many times and they leave. Well, we figured out you leave one, you know, out in 20 feet of water, we'll say you're in, you know, 3 to 5 feet off bottom, and just let it sit there on a 5-gallon bucket or in a rod holder, and then the other person just keeps jigging a little bit and touching the bottom and jigging. And what they're doing is the fish can feel it, you know, sense it with their lateral lines, but they can't maybe see it because it's too close to bottom. But by having that one dead rod way up in the air, and you just touch the rod tip once in a while, as they come in, like I was telling you about, and you start seeing them on below the bottom,
they
hone in on the high rod. They can see it. And so sometimes the next thing you see, even though you're jigging the one down by bottom, the next thing you see is the one, it comes right to the high rod, and you just touch the rod tip with your hand, get it vibrating, but you better have your hand on it because when they grab it, they're going to grab it. I mean, good. Don't matter what, if you got a lure, live bait, whatever you got on, they're going to grab it. Or sometimes they come right in and you're going to see them come in and go right for the one you're jigging. But if you're jigging two rods, your success rate and the amount of fish that eventually come in dwindle right down. And that was, you know, I'm talking, you know, 18, 19 pro staff, and we did it every time we went. And now this year I can talk from my heart, not off the top of my head.
Sure,
and
no.
That's a huge, huge tip right there. I mean, monstrous.
Now, I remember when you told us about that for the first time
that you guys were talking about.
Yeah, end of last year, you guys were talking about it a little bit because it was something that you had kind of seen. It was new, but you really hadn't tested enough to really know. And now you guys have that information. It's one more tool in the box that you can put forth to your people coming to the ice fishing school.
Right, and we sit with them hands on and go right there, right there. So now they, you know, it took us a long time to interpret things, and it's kind of like learning a new language because everybody's used to seeing fish the way they're supposed to be on your graph. Now we're teaching them how to interpret other things, and I even went to a few of the fish finder manufacturers, and they just kind of looked at me, but they also said, we kind of knew that, but they never had the opportunity to have that many good fishermen go out under, you know, conditions that, you know, everybody, you know, has cameras for one thing to make sure there's fish coming in or somewhere around them, you know. And the other thing is to put that amount of hours that the pro staff can put into it.
Sure. Mark Martin's our guest here. His website, markmartins.net. And you can find a link to that at wildmichiganradio.com. And that is our website. We can pick up our podcast and check out everything on there. Mark, and I know you're getting ready to go out, and the weekend's going to be, I don't know, a little rainy down here. I'm not sure what the forecast is for the weekend up there. But either way, you'll be covered up and doing some fishing.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I haven't heard what the weather's going to be like up there. You know, I'm hoping that it's going to be just a little snowy, probably a little warmer than, you know, you want it to be. But, you know, it's going to be making ice. Hopefully, we're going to find out here shortly when I look at the extended forecast that I haven't looked at today because I've been getting everything ready. But I know we're going to have a good time up there and catch lots of fish because this is first ice. First ice is when the fish bite the best. They haven't had a lot of traffic on them, and they're going to be in the spots you expect them to be. And just like my buddy said that lived down the lake, he said they're in the same spot before it froze up. They're sitting on the same weed edge as he was catching them before it froze up. So anybody that has a lake when it freezes up, you don't have to search. Just remember where you caught your last fish and go right back there, and usually you're going to be successful.
All right, Mark Martin, appreciate you joining us. Check him out, markmartins.net. Link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Thanks to Chad Stewart talking a little bit about CWD and the baiting ban and feeding ban still in effect for three counties, nine townships, especially in the core CWD area. Make sure you got all your safety gear and don't go on the ice alone. Whole another hour coming your way. We're going to speak with Chef Milos. Also, talk a little bit of pike spearing with Keith Stanton on Wild Michigan.